Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, January the 25th, on a pretty afternoon here in the Dallas area. A little sunny, a little chilly, but absolutely lovely afternoon. Well, it's two big stories today we're going to get into, and that is the showdown update. President Trump spoke a little while ago about that, and I actually think this is a very smart move by President Trump, and I'll tell you why. And of course, the other big story is over in South America, I should say, and that's the situation in Venezuela, where the country has two presidents. I mean, it's a pretty serious situation. There are two men in Venezuela who call themselves the president, Mr. Maduro, and the head of the legislature, who has been installed as the president of the country. And the question is, what's going to happen next? This is obviously an unsustainable situation down there. So I've got a few thoughts on that topic. But I want to begin by talking about an article that I had over at the American Thinker this morning, an article about what just happened over in Davos, you know, where they had this big meeting, and they talk a lot about climate change and all that kind of stuff, this big economic meeting. And it's interesting because every time we have one of these meetings where all these climate change people show up, it's interesting, they all show up in private jets. And it's just kind of fascinating. I mean, here we're talking about climate change and carbon footprints. All of them show up in private jets, which I've never really understood. What they ought to do is maybe they should rent a big 747. They should all meet in L.A. or something, maybe in Denver, in the middle of the country. Meet there, take a 747, fly to Davos. At least you're only running so much energy when you do that. But I think these people look a little hypocritical when they're talking about climate change and they're flying their own private planes. I just think that that's something they may want to reconsider in the future. Well, let's talk a little bit about the shutdown and President Trump today. President Trump today came out and said, we're basically running the government for another 3 weeks, and he's sort of putting it right back on the Democrats. The Democrats' message up to now has been, we're not going to negotiate as long as the government is shut down. That's been their message. My feeling is that that's the message that Mitch McConnell probably got over in the U.S. Senate. Yesterday, they had two votes. One vote the Democrats put up, didn't pass. The Republicans put up another one, didn't pass. So basically not much happened. But today, President Trump said, okay, we're going to open the government for another 3 weeks. We're going to pay people so that, you know, we don't have any more stories about federal workers who cannot eat or buy medicine for their kids. I always thought these stories were greatly exaggerated, by the way. I don't believe that anybody's starving or that anybody cannot buy medicine for their kids. I think these were stories that were greatly exaggerated by some media reports. And by the way, if anybody doesn't have money to buy medicine for their kids, what kind of health insurance do they have? I thought they were under the health insurance plan of the federal government. But anyway, I always felt that all of those things were greatly exaggerated. Nobody's going to go without medicine for their kids and all of that. But anyway, that topic is over. That topic is over because these people are back to work, or in the case of some of the TSA people, they're being paid while they were working. And by the way, let me just say something about that. I share what the president said today about these workers. A lot of these people were working without pay, and I think you got to give them a lot of credit. You got to give them a lot of credit for doing that. You got to give them credit that they were willing to do a very difficult job, you know, at the airports and so on, even though they were not being paid. So I think the president today saluted these workers, and I want to take a chance and say the same thing, that these are courageous people who went to work despite the fact they were not being paid. Now, they all knew they were going to get paid eventually. It wasn't like they had lost their jobs forever. But, you know, look, everybody likes to get paid on payday, so I understand that. But I think this was a smart move by President Trump because he is basically now, he's like deflating the situation. He's taken all the air out of the room. And now the Democrats are left with only one option. They can say, we're not interested in negotiations. We were just kidding when we told you that we wouldn't negotiate with a government shutdown. So the president said, okay, you want me to restart the government? Here we go. I just did. Now, what are you going to do? And I think this is going to be a difficult one for the Democrats, and this is going to look a lot different, really, 3 weeks from now than it does now. Because 3 weeks from now, they have to have something on the table. They have to have something on the table for border security, or otherwise the president, I assume, will then just simply declare an emergency and get his wall. And the Democrats are going to look in a silly position, frankly, on this issue. So a lot of people are going to think that he caved in, and I know that's going to be the media narrative for the next 24 hours, but I don't really buy that. I don't think he caved in at all. I think he made a smart move. He says, look, we're not going anywhere where we are right now. I don't have the votes. So he made a smart move. He cut his losses and said, okay, good. The ball is on your court now, Democrats. You guys take care of it. And I think in that respect, it may all look very different in a couple of weeks from now. Because the Democrats, I mean, one of the things that we didn't hear that much in the media was the divisions within the Democrat Party. We talked about it a couple of times. There are many, many Democrats in these centrist districts, these Democrats who were elected by a small margin, a point, point and a half, in many of these elections. I think a lot of these Democrats were getting a lot of heat from back home. And it went something like this. Hey, you know, you told us that you were going to go to Washington to work with the other party. You didn't tell us you were going to go to Washington to follow Nancy Pelosi. And I think that this is was starting to grow. I mean, both sides were under pressure. I'm not going to say that President Trump was not under pressure, but also was Nancy Pelosi. Speaker Pelosi was also under pressure. And I think what we're doing here is, in a sense, buying some time. He's buying 3 weeks. He's saying, okay, for the next 3 weeks, everybody's going to get paid. No more stories about workers without pay and so on. But now let's talk about border security. What are you going to do for me on border security? What are you going to do for the country on border security? And I think that in doing so, he has turned the tables on the Democrats here in a very smart way. And I think you're going to see a lot of Democrats realize that they better come up with something for the border, or otherwise this is not going to look as pretty for them as they think. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my good friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' website on the show information. Click on that. It'll take you to his website, and you'll have a chance to see where he's playing around town. Just a great musician, Carlos Geddes. He's wonderful. Great background music when you're having dinner and having a good time with your spouse, your wife, or a friend, or even a business dinner or a business lunch, whatever it may be. Now, of course, Carlos is from Venezuela, and there's a very difficult situation going on down in Venezuela. You basically have two presidents right now, or two people calling themselves the president of Venezuela. The United States has recognized Mr. Guaido, the opposition leader, or at least he's the head of the legislature. It's not so much the opposition party, just the head of the legislature. They're recognizing him as the interim president of Venezuela. On the other hand, Maduro claims that he's the president. And from what we understand, President Maduro has the support of most of the army. This is what they're saying. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's what they're saying. That's the official word going around. Here's the problem. He may have the loyalty of the army, but I don't think that's worth a heck of a lot unless the army is prepared to take out individuals' innocence. If the army decides to do a Tiananmen Square, for example, and start shooting civilians or protesters, then that's going to be an even bigger problem for Maduro than he may realize, because that's going to mean, frankly, I mean, that's going to open up the opportunity for the United States to intervene, and there could be a regional intervention, not just the United States. So the fact that Maduro claims that he has the army in itself is not that powerful of a weapon, because Guaido, on the other side, has the public. I mean, there's no question, if you see these demonstrations and you see what's happening in that country, there's no question that the public wants Maduro to leave. And Maduro, I think, is going to have to make a decision here pretty soon. Because, as I said, he could have the army, but this army could flip on him very quickly, too. We remember what happened in Romania, where the army turned on Ceausescu, you know, in a heartbeat. We remember what happened in Moscow, in Russia, back in 1991, when the army said, no, we're not going to shoot our people. We're not going to go out and, you know, and use our weapons against people supporting Yeltsin back then. So, I mean, Maduro is really in a very, very difficult situation. And I don't know who he's getting advice from. But what I would recommend to Maduro, if he was listening to me, I would say, Mr. Maduro, cut a deal with the parliament and get yourself over to the Cuban embassy or to maybe the Mexican embassy or to maybe the French embassy or somewhere, the Spanish embassy. Get yourself over there with your family and maybe some of your friends and ask for asylum, and then, you know, they'll get you out of the country as soon as possible. That's what I think he should be doing, because there's really no future for him in Venezuela. He could, again, he could have the army, but if the army doesn't shoot on people or isn't willing to enforce Maduro's orders, then having the army doesn't really mean a heck of a lot. It just means that you have the army. But if they're not willing to use those weapons on the people, it really doesn't mean anything for Maduro. And with respect to the opposition, look, it's obvious. Again, I'll repeat from all the images that you're seeing, all those people in the streets, they're not going to go back home. They're not going to go back home. They're only going to go back home when Maduro leaves the country. So that's the way it stands right now. Now, I heard Vice President Pence yesterday say something very interesting. He was being interviewed, and he was connecting Maduro to narco traffic or drug trafficking. And if that's the way Pence is talking, and I'm sure he's telling the truth, that means that Maduro not only has a problem with the people of Venezuela, but Maduro may have a problem with the United States as well, and he could find himself sharing a little space with Mr. Noriega in Florida, who, as you may remember, was the Panamanian dictator that we arrested back in 1989. So, again, if Maduro is listening, what I would say to you, Mr. Maduro, is get over to the Mexican embassy or get over to the Spanish embassy and get the heck out of the country as soon as you can, because there's no future for you in Venezuela. And the same for the armed forces. I mean, the armed forces have to realize they have to see what's happening in the streets. They have to see what's happening in the food stores, where there's no supplies of anything. One of the richest countries in the history of the world, and they don't have enough food, they don't have enough shortages. I mean, they have medical shortages, I should say, because of the policies of Maduro. So hopefully Maduro will get over to an embassy and leave the country, and Venezuela can get itself back together. I have a post that I'll be working on this weekend regarding the future of the Democrat Party, and this was inspired by an article that I read in the Newsweek online edition about how far the party is going to the left. And if you look at the Democrat Party, if you listen to the people running for president, this is clearly a party that is dashing to the left in a way that if you're a moderate Democrat out there, if you're a centrist Democrat out there, you have to worry what's going to happen, you know, after the primaries, and these primaries are happening in roughly about a year or so. What's going to happen after you nominate somebody and you get to the convention and you've got a candidate who's so far to the left that is probably unelectable? The point that this article makes is that the Democrats really have two problems in 2020. The first problem, of course, is defeating Trump, but that is actually doable if they have the right person. The second problem they have, which may not be fixable, if you will, may not be a problem they can deal with, is themselves, fighting among themselves and having to explain to the American people why you have a political party or a presidential nominee saying Medicare for all these high taxes on the rich, and not exactly explaining how you're going to pay for all of this. I mean, whose taxes are going to go up? They say, well, we're going to raise taxes on the rich. Well, that's garbage. That's garbage. Everybody knows that's garbage. You don't raise taxes on the rich. That all of these social programs end up raising taxes on the middle class and the business people who are the ones who produce in this country. So I think the Democrats are moving too far to the left. I'll just put it that way. Well, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.